CEB, an affiliate of UCSU, is proud to present Dr. Hunter Thompson.
That's not enough. Yeah, I apologize for being late. Are there any questions going? You did, those are bad.
We're very sorry for being late tonight. The plane was a little bit late.
Yeah. We're not in jail. Really, what the hell are they for? Who controls those things?
Turn those off.
Thank you. Thanks. Yeah, they're no good. All right.
That's it.
Well, you were apologizing for being late?
Yeah, we were apologizing for being late tonight.
Some Nazi held us up at the gate down there. We had no permit to park. And we're on the list?
Oh, yeah, we're on the list.
We weren't there, though.
No.
We've been out there for 45 minutes, I'm sorry. Held up by some local Nazi. You're supposed to get this thing going.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. I don't think I'm accurate. Well, let's find out what kind of question we should deal with. Yeah, I'll get an ice cream.
We have some mics back there, and does anybody, you know, we want some suggestions. Well, does anybody have a suggestion for a question? No. Yeah. If you want to ask a question, approach the mic. And there must be someone out there that has a question.
No, we're going to try to determine the nature and the meaning of the crowd, as it were.
And,
we'll be off on the wrong subject. It would take us a long time to get back to the right subject. Is there any dominant curiosity here that we can deal with? You, yes.
Okay, I'm not going to ask you what is reality, okay? What I want to know is, do you think do you think that the authorities on Earth, be they what they are, have been contacted by extraterrestrials, intelligent creatures from another planet? I really want to ask you this, man.
Which authorities? Who?
Whichever ones are in charge, you know, it depends on where you are.
Yeah, probably so.
Thank you.
Why not? Okay, is that the subject we have to deal with tonight?
Yes, the young lady in the coat. No, she's just here.
Is there anyone here who can, yes.
You.
For the crowd, as it were. Yeah.
Is this one on, too? Have you ever, since Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, do you think you've ever found the American dream, that, you know, that discotheque you were looking for?
I found it right there. That's what I was, that's the great American novel.
That's it?
Yeah, that's it.
Well, you know, Hunter, one of the questions that we came up with is like when you're writing about American Dream and Fear and Loathing, and we weren't really quite sure what you were talking about, really.
Well, what puzzled you? What bothered you about it?
Well, the whole idea of American Dream is it really something out there to be looking for? Or is there you know, as college students here, you know, that's what kind of things, you know, we're all looking for, you know, to find out. You know, that's, you know, why we're all here, right, guys? Right. Pretty much.
Well, it's like the golden streets of heaven, or the U.S. Marines that patrol them, or guard them. I've always wanted to ask a Jesuit why, if heaven was as fine and organized a place as it's supposed to be, they would need a bunch of goddamn Marines to guard the streets. You don't even need that in the South Bronx. Excuse me, that's a digression. Yeah, we've been taught, whole generations of people in this country, we've been taught that the American dream is the sort of guiding ethic. Free enterprise, democracy, honesty, truth, beauty, things like that. And if the myth exists, then you know, it's like rainbows. It's a worthwhile thing to chase. You know, there are worse ways to spend your life than chasing the American dream. But once you've found it, like I did in Vegas, at what was called the Old Psychiatrist Club. Then it is kind of puzzling, you know. You feel kind of naked and alone out there, because once you found the dream and now there's just a slab of burned out concrete in Las Vegas called the Old Psychiatrist Club, then, you know, it's kind of hard to go on from there in the same, you don't have the same dedication to journalism. I flew out here from Chicago, actually I came from New York, but on the Chicago leg, Tex Colson, I'm sure he's probably here tonight. It didn't occur to me to ask him if he was coming out here for my speech.
He's probably here.
But Tex Colson, my old friend from the White House, who is now, apparently, for the first time, I listened to him for 2 hours, and I think he probably is serious about Jesus. But it was strange sitting next to a guy. I noticed he was wearing a sort of a yellow French cuff shirt, and he had his presidential cufflinks on. And I was going to ask him, right at the end, as I got off the plane, I was going to tap him on the shoulder and say, those are nice cufflinks. I don't have any myself. But the last time I saw the ones you're wearing, you bastard, you were pointing at me saying they're going to put me in jail for the duration, which is true. The last time Colson spoke to me, he was to threaten to put me in jail for just being a degenerate, you know, it's a bad person. The record should show that since then Colson's been in jail and I haven't. And I don't need Jesus yet. I might. We can keep Jesus in reserve. Did we answer that question? No, we didn't. Yeah, we did, yeah. How did we?
Dr. Thompson, are you still a bigger football fan than President Nixon?
You know, I used to think that was the only time Nixon spoke the truth to me. And from what I've learned since then, I suspect he even lied about that. No, actually, he knew. He gave me a serious crackback the first time I talked to him about football when he knew the name of a second-string Oakland flanker who maybe played 7 plays in 1 Super Bowl, never showed up again. Nixon not only knew who he was and what he had done, but he knew where he'd gone to college, which I'm not sure what it tells us, except that at least he can tell the truth about one thing. But, I'm a football fan in the sense that, I guess Nixon and I must share one thing, we have one thing in common. That we're serious football fans. I don't, it's not, there's no shame in that, to admit you have one thing in common with Richard Nixon. We both wear belts, you know. We spend American money, so, it was eerie to find out that I could get along with Nixon and actually have a ho-ho conversation with him about football. Because I always felt he lied about everything. And that was the one thing he caught me on. But we caught him in the end. On a much bigger thing.
You know, earlier tonight you talked about Vietnam and how he felt that more things should be said about Vietnam than have been said. You care to talk about this at all?
We were talking about the books.
Yeah.
Best books that I've read recently have been books on Vietnam, and they're not just good books about Vietnam, they're good books, period. It's, Dog Soldiers has been out now for about 2 years. It's the best novel by an American writer I've read in 10 years. And Michael Herr, who was a freelance journalist, he would write long things, say, for Esquire and The Siege of Khe Sanh and stuff like that, has a book out just about now called Dispatches, which probably is the best book not only about Vietnam but about a whole generation and the fixation that we all in the end had to have about the damn place. That's why I went over there the last 2 weeks of the war. The place had caused me so much trouble for 10 years, I thought I should see it, but well, I still had a chance.
You know, in the end of your one of your books, I think it was 72, when you went over to Vietnam for the final days there, you went to Cambodia, and you said you experienced the fear and the loathing.
Not Cambodia, no. That went down about the time I got to Saigon. Laos.
The what?
If I said I went to Cambodia, I lied. No, Laos. I'm getting you off the hook.
Okay.
Laos.
I have a question up here. Hello? The question?
Oh, I can't answer any questions about Cambodia. I was not allowed to go there. The
Well, you talked about it.
The Khmer Rouge had taken over, and they were vicious little bastards. Yeah, I remember in Laos, an L.A. Times girl, Jacques Leslie, works for the L.A. Times, is one of these confirmed Asia freaks who cannot come back to this country. The culture shock has been too heavy. And, you know, to him, New Delhi is home, and Hong Kong is sort of like what we think of as his version of New York. If you go from New Delhi to Hong Kong, you're going to the big city. And there are a lot of people like that, correspondents, who get so locked into Asia or other places they can't come back to this country. And usually the best ones are that way. But I remember Leslie, and they carry magnetic chessboards so that the men will stick on the chessboards for, you know, maybe until the next war. You can keep a game going because if you're always in jeeps and on planes and, you know, the chessmen never, they don't fall off. There's no way to knock them off. And, what was I saying? Well, Jacques Leslie, I don't recall it now. We were in Laos.
Anyway. Are there any questions out there?
There's a question up the balcony.
Questions?
Yeah, in the balcony.
Where?
Up here.
Right there.
Yeah. Literary question. In your book, The Hell's
on
Angels.
Top there?
Yeah, right here.
Oh, all right.
In your book, The Hell's Angels, you described a Hell's Angels gangbang at a merry pranksters party.
Excuse me? I heard the first sentence. I didn't hear the second one.
You described a Hell's Angels gangbang at a merry pranksters party up in San Francisco, I think it was.
La Hama,
yeah. And in Tom Wolfe's book, Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test, he described a scene that was very similar.
It wasn't just similar. I sent Tom my tapes, and I think the exact. Anyway. He asked if I'd send him, you know, the kind of raw data, as a horrible kind of phrase. It was an ugly, vicious scene. And that's any similarity is explained by the fact that we both described it from my tapes.
Oh. Whatever happened to Tom Wolfe?
Hmm?
Whatever happened to Tom Wolfe? Where is he now?
Oh, he's alive and well in New York. And he's turning into a royalist of sorts. But then he thinks I'm turning into a brain damaged geek. So Tom's idea of a progressive decade is, you know, a camel's hair coat in every closet and Gucci's on every other foot. But he doesn't agree with me that the country is into what I call the grim slide. I think it is. But he's a good person. He's a good writer and a good human being. And he doesn't hurt anybody. You know, he gets by without causing the kind of damage that Colson caused. Or Nixon. Only when I have to. And I don't think people understand just how rotten and wretched and sick the trade of being a writer. You understand? Who said that? Oh, God's mercy on you. I would prefer never to write anything again. But since I'm not into crime deeply enough, and I and there's nothing else that it seems really worthwhile doing except maybe hunting sea snakes in the Great Barrier Reef, I'd prefer to do that. Yeah, I'll write when I must write. Either that or I have to go to work, and I haven't had a job in about 21 years. But you pay dues in some odd way when you have to finally make up for not working for 3 or 4 years. It catches up. It hurts. It's hard. That's what I'm doing now. Pardon me? I could. Yeah, I could make $10,000 a month doing this. But you have to take that this kind of thing very seriously and work at it. And well, like Julian Bond, I saw him on Tom Snyder the other night saying that 3 months out of the year he goes out for 90 straight days, and he probably makes about $5,000 a day at that. Now, I figure if I can make $2,000 a month at it, that pays for my cocaine. It, you know. Yeah, we keep a separate account for this. It's a very frivolous account. You know, I figure the money should be spent in the same way that came in. For no reason at all. You want to talk again? Well, go ahead. I have never met Trudeau. Every time he gets a chance to meet me, he gets sick. Yeah, it actually happens once a year at the normal parties, you know, the annual normal convention in Washington. He sells cartoons, you know, to raise money, and I'm the national strategist on the extremist side. I actually am on the advisory board, the national advisory board, which is eerie after being a criminal for 20 years to look down and see your name on the bottom of the stationery on the advisory board with all these. The ex-director of the DEA and the same people who've been trying to lock you up for the last 18 of the last 20 years, you're now on the board of directors with a bunch of dope addicts. It's wonderful. But no, I never, Trudeau is, I'm not sure who's using whom in that situation. The only constant reaction I have to it is it's very strange to be a cartoon character. when you're trying to get around the world and still make a living and get by. And if you don't believe it, try it sometime or even ask or try to find somebody you can ask what it feels like. There ain't none around. It's a very strange thing to be. And it happens all over the world. In Perth, Australia, in Mystic, Connecticut, anywhere that goddamn comic strip constantly pops up. Waco, Texas. It robs me of a very valuable and kind of human part of my life, which is the kind of privacy you assume. Some people want to grow up and be firemen and some want to be president. Nobody wants to grow up and be a cartoon character. So, and there's no precedent. Nobody can tell you what it's, they don't teach courses on how to handle it. I might someday. I wondered about that. It's odd just to be a. Never mind. Fuck. Let's get on to something else.
You got a question?
Yes. Sounds like a voice on the floor. Who's talking? Oh. Would I? Or will I? Or what?
Will you ever run for an office again? Say in Aspen.
Right now, I would say no, unconditionally. I mean, an honest no. As close as I ever came to being insane, except maybe for last summer, was when I actually considered running for the Senate, from Colorado. I seriously thought about it. And I feel full of shame and grief to look back on that and realize that I was serious. Well, only for a while. My friend Gary talked me out of it, We flipped a coin. Who's talking? Wait a minute. Well, the same way I always did. I haven't changed my mind about Carter. What prompts you to ask that? We could narrow it. Do you have any specific idea? No? I feel the same way I've ever since I first met the man. No? I've been on planes all day. What happened today? Oh, actually, that was the, I got off in Chicago and I saw a wet ink headline that said Carter accused the oil companies of giant war criminals and you're using the word rip-off. That's wonderful. Look, he's as close to being on my side as anybody of those three who were possible at the time could be. And at the time that he was a serious candidate, was perceived as one all over the country, the choice was Humphrey, Ford, or Carter. Now, if the day I have to feel guilty about choosing Carter out of those three is the day I'm going to go, I'll leave the country and go somewhere else.
Hunter?
I still like the man. I'm not sure he likes me. He's scared of me. But hey, I'm scared of him in a way, too. It's a balance of terror. You know, it's just, how many people can actually deal with the White House on a straight across balance of terror basis? I think it's an achievement. Did people hear that? You're not in the mind. What's my opinion of David Rockefeller and the Trilateral Commission? Well, let's see. We know first they're rich people. And second, they're powerful people because they're rich. They're not necessarily smart. And to me, not necessarily dangerous. But they're just smart enough to be embarrassed about the kind of stuff that would make them dangerous. No? You? Well, what's that mean to you? You could be right. I don't think so. Yeah, for a subject like this, you probably
should
have a
mic. Go ahead, use the mic,
Hunter?
It's too complicated.
People can hear in the background. And
just ease up to the mic, we can do that.
Wait to see him walk out upstairs up there.
We heard that the BBC made a movie of your campaign.
Who's talking?
For sheriff. From above.
Up above, right?
Up above. In the middle.
That's who?
We heard that the BBC made a film of your campaign for sheriff. Where do we go and see that movie?
When can you see it?
Yeah.
When do you want to? I don't carry it with me, but...
I thought
we almost saw that.
You get a hall and whatever, we'll work out something. You can see it whenever you want. I'm not sure I'm entitled to sell it, but or rent it. You can see it free.
Getting back, the Trilateral Commission, being the commissioner of West Germany,
see.
Japan.
Let me explain to everybody out here that I can't tell. All the sun comes up to be in the same place. So who's talking now?
I am.
Who's I? All right.
With Zbigniew Brzezinski giving sort of acceptance to Rockefeller that said, Carter's a good man, why don't we make him president? Being the
but that's what Ziggy said to Rocky.
That's what Ziggy said to David, a bit of time ago, I suppose around 75, when... they first interviewed Carter to see if he was, an acceptable person for the Trilateral Commission.
He was acceptable before then.
Before then.
He was acceptable back in 72 or 3.
Oh, well, I'm sure he's
Why
acceptable.
Should he be? He's a businessman.
Yeah, really. Hell. Yeah. But,
Farmer. an agrarian liberal? What the hell?
Yeah, really?
Urban conservative. It, comes out... fascist libertarian. Excuse me.
Actually, libertarian, say?
Hmm?
Did you say actually he's libertarian?
Well, I'm just trying out phrases. I don't get a chance to use the microphones that often and hear what it sounds like in a hall like this.
Booms, doesn't it?
I kind of like fascist libertarian. It's Hamilton Jordan calling Arabs sand niggers. There's a certain ring to it. It stops you. You have to think. Who said that? Oh, that's Hamilton Jordan. Yes.
Do you ever consider what that sort of signifies, and do you have an opinion on that?
Why Hamilton Jordan refers to Arab descendants?
No.
Which one?
No.
I have opinions on that. I think it's dumb and dangerous.
No, more in the line of the Trilateral Commission being West Germany, Japan, and America, and they're just trying to maintain capitalism.
This is like the Bilderberger Society. It's one of these. Boogeymen, like the communists, in a sense, say in South America or among low-level American diplomats or soldiers, who actually attribute massive and unnatural strength to the enemy in order to justify their own existence.
Right, oh, sure.
I'm not worried about the Trilateral Commission. Those bastards can barely keep their banks afloat, much
for
less
sure.
having to...
Yeah.
And
oh, yeah, you
can
really,
be sure
yeah.
that with all the presidential candidates last time, I'm certain Carter was not the choice of the almost pure establishment kind of people who are and are on and run the Trilateral
yeah,
Commission.
Yeah, only because they didn't know him.
Well, they had their, you know, they had all their own people,
sure.
including an incumbent president.
Yeah.
You know, a dingbat Republican with no brains
yeah,
at all.
Oh,
just say,
yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, pick by Nixon.
Of course, he'd do anything.
Pick by Nixon.
Like a fat Eisenhower.
Yeah.
So, I don't think it was in the interest of David Rockefeller and those people to risk electing Carter when they had their choice, if they were smart enough to get him elected, of almost any of their own people.
You really don't. I mean, hell, a Trilateral Commission has a commission.
Why are you scared of these people? It's like water
color.
Rats, you know, or field rats.
No, hell,
you could be right, but I've gone through a lot of paranoia.
Yeah.
And I'm still paranoid about some things, but that's not one of them.
Yeah.
You know, the more you see those people and then actually have to confront them on their own turf, I think... Maybe you like them more, perhaps, but you respect them less, or you worry about them less.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're less powerful.
Yeah, they're not competent.
Yeah.
Yeah, they can't even
of course,
control.
They can't even direct their power. Sure.
What's
but,
that?
Okay.
You're losing control of yourself.
I have a question. Speaking right here, what do you think of those new? Yeah.
Right.
Those new aimless substitutes like Rush.
What
do you think
people
of those?
I can't hear you.
What do you think of those new aimless substitutes like Rush? You know, are you familiar with those?
Is that the there's a yeah, I know what you mean. It's what it is amyl nitrate cut down to like 1/100th of a point under the legal definition of whatever narcotic or dangerous drug or whatever. And there's a it's butyl nitrate, rather than amyl nitrate.
So where do we get the good stuff now?
Well, if you have any, come see me. You come up right now, in fact. You can talk.
I feel off that one.
No, it's just like drinking, watered whiskey or the kind of cocaine that's sold mainly around here right now, if any is sold. Yeah, it's sort of Fifth Avenue cocaine. That kind of thing.
Did you vote for Salamander for president?
For who?
For president.
Who
Salamander.
I'm getting two voices and I only see one person.
I thought you were familiar with this character in the Aspen Times.
That lizard?
Yeah.
Yeah, I endorsed him for mayor of Aspen, but not for president.
Right.
I didn't endorse Carter either, goddammit. That was the only winner who did that. Yeah, all I said about Carter was that he was about to prove that Adlai Stevenson was right when he said that people, in a democracy, people get the kind of government they deserve. And I think the only person who really understood that and didn't like the article and didn't think it was at all funny was Carter. Yeah, and Hamilton Jordan, yeah, he didn't like Hamilton. The first time I met Hamilton, I set him on fire. They had a party last night at the White House for early supporters of Carter. I wasn't invited. Yeah, Jan Winter and I spent last night deep in grief of not being invited to the early supporters of Carter party. They had about 500 people, but I'm not sure who they were. Who admits to it now?
Question over here. What do you think of Eldridge Cleaver's recent Jesus Freakdom?
After riding out from Chicago with Colson, I'm a little bit rattled because I have.
Did you meet him with Colson or was?
No, really... no but to me it's the same gig. I think. I mean, I have a very serious.
Have you ever met the man? And what do you think of?
That's Colson's trip. I believe that if I read Eldridge Cleaver and we're looking at 7 or 8 years in Soledad, I'd damn well endorse anything rather than go. But and that's your own, I think, your own kind of private hell that I'm sure they attach. This is Tex Colson's prison fellowship thing, and I believe he's serious. And there is a box number on it if you want to describe. That's prison fellowships. Anyone want to write this box number down? Well, a bunch of cynics. You know, a man can't change. But boy, for Tex Colson to change. And I don't know Eldridge, but I know what kind of perverse swine federal cops can be. And can you imagine having to live with somebody that says you can stay free as long as you endorse Jesus and never admit it to anybody? Not even your breath. You know, the first time you even hint that you're kidding, it's right into fucking Allenwood with you, you know, zipped into Folsom. That to me is as close to hell as you get on earth. That's what I'd do if I were a cop. Just to make him repent publicly, and the first time, as a condition of the parole, which none of us will ever hear about, that if he ever laughs, if he ever doesn't do it with a straight face, it's right into prison. You know,
that's
an ugly kind of punishment.
We have a question up on the balcony.
Yes, I was wondering if you could
tell us
about... The
balcony's big, man. Where are they? Stand up or something. Wait, I can't...
Could you tell us about your latest bout with venereal disease?
No. Fortunately, I can answer that with a clear and Christian heart and bright white eyes. I've not been troubled by venereal disease recently. And so I can't tell you about it. But I warn you against the filthy herpes.
So my real
herpes syndrome
was,
it gets on people. You know, it's,
my real question is, could you give me your feelings about disco?
Well, you're a smart son of a bitch. Yeah.
Casey and the Sun.
I feel the same way about disco as I do about herpes. All right, what do you got next?
Over here.
No, it's your turn again. I want to see you walk on that one.
I'm up here in the balcony and I can't hear shit.
Never mind. Let's go down here. All right.
I have a question. You keep mentioning cocaine.
Wait, who's?
Over here.
We call it. All right, you're next. Yes.
You keep mentioning cocaine, but I read an article you had where you kind of call it a watered down drug for the masses.
Oh, that's a treacherous and useless drug.
What did you say again? Because
I'm serious.
No, do you remember what you said? Something about going to a party and
just because
something.
You read something in a magazine that claims I said it, it has no goddamn relation in the world to what I might have said.
No, you know.
You know. And
but do you remember what you said in that article? I don't even remember.
Well, at first you hadn't mentioned the magazine, or when?
I can't put
1952 interview in Collier's.
No, well, I'll
what
tell
the
you
hell? What are you talking about?
I'll tell you what you said.
Well,
what they said.
Why don't you get your facts down? We'll talk about the whatever interview you want to talk about.
Well, listen, what they said, you said was. Right?
What? Who is they, man? What never, magazine?
Never mind.
Next, please.
But you really must. I mean, we can't talk about an interview that I don't even know what you're talking about.
No, it's just that you had an opinion about cocaine that you'd like to go to a party with cocaine users and give them methadrine, acid, and saltpeter, I believe it was.
Well, since you don't recall where you read that,
I can't. All right.
Why should I even? There's no point in my even thinking about whether I might have said it. Maybe I did. But it was, you know, I see a lot of things. That's one of the luxuries of living this way. You know, you can say just about whatever you feel like saying.
We have another question up here.
No, but this gentleman over here is on deck, as it were, yeah.
Right. I just wondered something. why is your name still on the staff of Rolling Stone magazine when I've read an interview with you?
You talk like me now. You gotta.
Excuse me?
Slow down. You're talking like me.
Okay. Why is your name still on the staff of Rolling Stone magazine when I've read an interview which you just expressed displeasure with it?
I don't know. Why did I spend last night, all of last night, with Jan Wenner first in the office and then. I actually slept 2 hours this morning in Jan's apartment and I don't understand these things. People are very strange. I got some weird friends. It's kind of fun to play around with them. I never asked my name be taken off. I didn't see any point in that. And for some reason I never bothered to ask him about it. Jan has kept it on. I'm a firm believer in making life as easy as possible. And why should I have my name taken off there? If he wants to keep it on, That's easy, you know. Just don't bother me about it.
Are you planning on writing them for them?
Hmm?
Are you planning on writing them for them again?
For some reason, I must be fucked up. I'm trying to listen to you. You're right. I have a hard time. Yeah, get this over. I was having a hard time hearing it, but it occurred to me that maybe that's not the way to listen to you. I don't know where the sound's coming from. It's coming down on me from all around.
Are you planning on writing for them again?
Well,
yeah,
I wasn't, but right now I am. I'm not sure how it happened or why, but I haven't slept now, and this is the fourth night, and we spent, me and Jan and David Felton spent all last night in the new offices overlooking Central Park in the Plaza Fountain. Jesus Christ. That's such a bizarre shift, you know. That was the first time, yesterday was the first time I've been in the offices, and it was, it actually intimidated me. It was weird. But that's not any way to send a yawn. And it's driven Felton half nuts. So we had a kind of celebration last night. I just, for the first time, Winter has finally not only had access to the best kind of sound equipment, but he understands it. Somebody understands it, because his office is full of really elegant machinery. And last night we wired it all together and really cranked it on with the old Rolling Stones albums and
well, you know, Mr.
They're
Thompson,
completely crazy. We talked to
Dr. Thompson. Yeah.
I have another question in the balcony.
Well, first of all, I think it's a real honor for them to have your name on their head mass.
Who asked you?
But who do you want in the series?
What are you offering? You know, I'll go either way. I went, last night I had the Yankees in five runs, which I thought, shit, nobody can beat a bet like that. And
wouldn't you want the better city to be be the winners in the World Series, like Los Angeles?
Having a favorite in a little baseball team is like having a favorite oil company. There's no. Or, like a favorite big-time college football team. It's there's not much choice between, say, Alabama, USC, and, these people don't stand for much of anything except good football. It's entertainment. What was the question? We've lost control of ourselves here.
Hey, this is Guthrie.
Well, I was going to say. Why should I fuck with the microphone?
Yes, we have a pressing question in the balcony again. Are the rumors really true that they have Rin Tin Tin's brain and suspended animation in Fresno, California?
You're that same freak I was talking before, aren't you? Somebody should get him away from that microphone. Maybe not, I don't care.
Is it really true that they have Rin Tin Tin's brain in suspended animation in Fresno?
I think so. why shouldn't they? What the hell? As I say, is it true that they have steel-belted radials? Of course. Makes perfect sense. You've been here before, haven't you?
Yeah.
All right.
Last time I heard you speak, you were talking very vehemently opposed to what Rolling Stone was doing now. Now you're talking about writing for him again. What changed your mind?
What makes you think there's a contradiction in that? I used to get $500 for writing the same for Rolling Stone. Now I get $5,000. That tells you something, doesn't it? Now, I don't want to write any more journalism for anybody, but how many grapes do you have to have pushed into your mouth before you finally swallow one? It makes my life easier right now to do a little bit.
According to the MK Ultra documents that are being declassified...
Speaking in English? What?
according to the MK Ultra documents that are recently being declassified... According to the MK Ultra documents that are recently being declassified by the government, they were doing a lot of experimenting with acid in the late 60s, well, before that too, but do you know of any government connection to the acid that flooded the campuses in the late 60s or early 70s, or perhaps government connection to some of the acid that you might have done?
Well, I have some pretty good acid right now. I was given, not with me, of course, but It's a locker at the Denver bus station. I think once again, you're attributing too much strength and mystery to the enemy. Although it is kind of intimidating to think that, for instance, it must have been 1961 when I first confronted acid. Maybe 60, I guess, in Big Sur and Esalen, what was later to become Esalen. At that point, that was a really rare thing to run across. And it's a little scary to realize that in 53, 7 years earlier than that, the CIA was working out on, putting in people's drinks in St. Louis. And they were playing with Sandoz acid, too, which is not, it's not your cocaine variety acid. It's,
weren't you good friends with Kim Kesey back in the early 60s?
Yeah, have you heard rumors that we're no longer friends?
Well, Kim Kesey, the famous author.
Yeah, no, I think Kesey's probably the most honorable thing a writer can do in this country, which is, hide out and retire and just refuse to say any more than he wants to say. Unfortunately, his family has a dairy farm and mine doesn't. So, I have to work for my money. There are no trust funds. There's nothing. If I had 1,500 dairy cattle, believe me, you'd never hear my name again, except maybe in Doonesbury. But that's what he's done. He told me in 66 or 67, he was never going to write again because he thought it was a bad way to communicate. At the time, we were all nuts, and it just sounded like one more, piece of talk. But he sort of carried out his threat. It's still, I think there are very few American writers who've written two books as good as The Cuckoo and The Great Notion. Those are two very good books. If you get two out of two like that, you deserve to have Gary Cowles in return. Dope addict over here.
All right. I was recently in Central and Eastern Canada, and while I was there, the thought occurred to me that the future of North America might not be in the United States. And I wanted to know your opinion, if you'd ever met the Prime Minister, the other Trudeau, and two, whether you had any opinions on the pros and cons of French separatism, because emotionally my feelings were for the Quebecois, but a lot of people think that René Lévesque is an asshole, and I tend to agree. So I'm wondering,
Carter might be an asshole too, but that doesn't mean he did me right.
Yeah, well, I don't think, I wanted to know if you had
sorry,
any opinions.
I didn't want to argue with you, but...
Yeah, right. I mean, whether you had any opinions, because my feeling was that emotionally it's correct in terms of both the survival of Quebec and Canada as a whole, it's not a good thing.
No, it's really not good for Canada as a whole, but when you have a province that large and that conscious of their French identity, if they can make it work... They don't have to argue about it. They only have about, 6% sort of English population, or maybe call it 10 at the tops. If they can make it work, they can just make it. They don't have to ask the English about it, or the Canadians. They just do it.
That's right. But
if they can't make it work, it'll probably be a very noisy, dumb issue for a long time. If they can, I would succeed, but I wouldn't do it if I thought it was going to cost me $40 a day more than it's costing me now. Mm-hmm. And I get the feeling they thought about that, though. I've been up there and talked to those people, and I get the feeling that the separatists have given enough thought to it to... So I tend to believe them. I'm for them.
And what's your feeling about Trudeau, the other one?
He stepped in shit, I think. like a moth to the light, or the flame, he got into politics at a time when it was very fashionable. He was a very, I think, a very bright and very human kind of guy. But it hadn't done him much good. And I suppose, if you look at it in a selfless way, that he's done Canada some good. No disasters have occurred up there. The country hasn't gone to hell. The Canadian dollar is still on par with at least ours. On the evidence, he's done a pretty good job for a kind of Kennedy-style politician, which is going out of style. I think it's probably cost him a lot personally, but uh, if you know, if I had to choose who should have been the president. You know, somebody has to die in order to maintain the office.
Somebody up there in the balcony?
Hunter, can you tell us if there's anybody left in Washington as evil as Nixon? And if so, are they in a position of responsibility?
If there was, I wouldn't be here, man. I'd be in Washington.
Do you name names?
No, I'm, that's what I mean. There's no, no, there's nobody. That's one of the problems of writing about politics now, or even political journalism. You got to have real ugly bastards to crank you up. And you know, who are the boogeymen now? It's I was sitting, I flew back from Chicago with sitting next to one of the great boogeymen of our time, as far as I'm concerned. A truly evil person, Colson. When he was in the government, yes. Tex. He was the one who said, once you get him by the balls, their hearts and minds will follow. that's what he had above his desk in the White House.
You got a question down here?
Why is Idi Amin still alive? Well, nobody's crazy enough to go in there and challenge him, apparently. Once you get people intimidated that badly, and he apparently has them very seriously intimidated with massive firing squads and huge, you know, D-9 graves, stuff like that. And we're talking about Idi Amin here, and why is he still alive? Are you disturbed about Amin? Well, what would you do about him then? I'm not. We've forgotten about what's happening in Uganda? Not me. I've been, I'm trying to get an assignment to go there and talk to Amin. Well, yeah, it's like going to the swamp, you know, to visit the alligator king. It's, the best odds are 50-50 that I will not come out of that country if I go in. It's kind of reassuring.
You got a question up there?
Excuse me, we have to cut you off.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Is this right?
Who's talking? Women. No, no, you have no microphone. Go on.
Could you give us the microphone, please?
No, you can, in a second, you can do, yeah, you're next, but.
This is not political, and it may sound really naive, but how do you escape structure the way you do? You are incredible, you're wonderful, and your degeneracy.
I have a feeling that I didn't hear enough of that to be confident. I heard enough to know that it's a dangerous question, but not enough to answer it. You have to tell me again.
Do you want to try again?
Well, I heard just enough to be. I think I should be careful with this.
No, I'm very. I'm serious.
Well, but I just can't hear exactly what you want me to tell you.
Now say what you want to say.
Well, what? About what?
Huh? What?
Your earlier question was different from that last one.
Yeah.
What?
Do you want me to repeat it?
What's that?
Would you like me to repeat it? All right.
Yeah, it was an interesting question. But I want to hear it.
I am impressed by your ability to escape structure the way I feel like I'm a prisoner of it, sort of. And it seems in some of your writings you've been able to do that, but, I mean, it expresses, you express yourself or something within yourself that way. I want to know how you can, I hate to use the word degenerate, it's the only thing I think of, but. No, it's, I'm not.
You were doing so well. degenerate, well, that's my word.
I know you heard me the first time.
And you know what? I just didn't hear it. I'm sorry. I'm not combative here.
Well, I don't know if I'm coming across right.
Everything I heard, everything perfectly up to degenerate, then I laughed, and you said something in the middle of it. What was the second, the thing after degenerate?
How do you do it?
How do I maintain as a degenerate?
Well, no.
I told you it was a dangerous question.
No, you. We might forget it because I'm not coming across the right way.
It's just It's a mechanical, I think it's a mechanical question, or a failure.
Well, okay.
Or maybe a question of your own sanity.
That's right, yeah.
Why do you figure that since I can live without that a structure, which I'm kind of paraphrasing you, that I must be either degenerate or insane?
It's not. I mean, it's no, I'm using a campy word. I think you know what I'm asking you. I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you escape from something.
Neither do I. That's an honest...
That's what I want to know.
Yeah. You have to run real fast and never sleep much.
Thank you.
You got a question?
Yeah. I was wondering when and how you met Ralph Steadman, and also to what extent you believe that his pictures portray your views.
Portray what?
I said the second question was, to what extent do you believe that Ralph Steadman's pictures portray your views? I mean, do you feel they portray them accurately?
My views?
Mm-hmm.
I would generally endorse almost any artistic expression Ralph made. I think he's probably one of the most sort of completely articulate people I've ever met, and one of the best people, just, you know, in terms of his own head and his life. And he does better with his pens and his paper than I do with a typewriter. If you knew Steadman, they should make more like him.
How did you meet him?
It was a total accident. I was actually, when Pat Oliphant was here as a cartoonist for the Post, or here, whatever this town is down there, place of oil refinery, he's a horrible stink as we came up the road, was really grisly. But when I decided that I should go cover the Kentucky Derby, you know, go back to the land of my youth, that sort of thing, and dig up one more bone, I called Pat at night and said, look, I don't want to work with photographers. And I wanted Pat, or my idea was to get an artist, and at that time, Pat was the best and closest person I could get. But he had something about it in his contract where he couldn't take outside assignments. And it was Warren Hinkle, who was the editor of Scanlon's. He'd been the editor of Ramparts for years. He's run about 7 magazines into the ground. He's still the best editor to work for, as long as you don't have to pay him. But Hinkle got Steadman, when I told him I couldn't get Oliphant to the story, he said, well, I know a guy in England who's very good. Nobody ever heard of him, including me. And there was really no choice, so I just had to accept Hinkle's judgment. And they sent Steadman to Louisville to meet me at some weird hotel on the outskirts of town. And that's one of the best presents I ever had. It was really a nice accident. But he was kind of underground, not notorious, but known in England at that time. Now he's almost as respectable as Oliphant is.
Hunter, you got a question down here?
Excuse me, what? Down with the maggots or the sharks. If I ever got to be 50 years old, I'd be so confused I'd probably have to go into EST or something. You know, something. Yeah, I'd be if I to have lived this long has seriously disoriented me. What do I mean by guns, though? It makes people like you ask me questions like that in shock. I don't know. I really don't know. It was a good word that I liked at the time, and it separated me from, say, the New Journalist, or I didn't feel that I was a part of any group or type of journalist. And Gonzo was a good word. I could have called myself a sand nigger at the time, you know. That was nothing. Nothing at all. It was just a... Not to me. Well, apparently it means what I do. That's what I gather from people who tried to do it, but it's the same reason that if I on any masthead always insist on having my own weird corner, like, you know, national affairs desk or global affairs editor, foreign manager. It's a perversity. Oh, good. A certain body of evidence building up here. Words like degeneracy, insanity, madness. I don't think you people are as serious as I would hope.
Hunter, we have a question up here.
When Ken Kesey said that he thought the novel was not a good way to communicate, was that just an offhand remark, or did he think there was a better way?
Apparently he thought he was right, because he hasn't written another one since then. And he's obviously capable of doing it, so... Anyway, some people have to take it their... you have to take their word and take it by face value. I think Kesey's one of them.
So does that mean that he's just given up trying to communicate, or that he's trying in a different way?
That's a heavy judgment. I think as long Kesey appears to have worked out a life for himself that which is many jumps ahead of what I worked out. I'm still being buffeted about by the storms of. I think he's come to some kind of adjustment in his own world that I haven't. So to that extent, he's made progress, and he's probably ahead of me. Just because he's quiet doesn't mean that he wants to talk. A lot of times, it's a lot more fun to be quiet.
Would you like to ask a question on the balcony?
Which one?
You said you like to make life as easy as possible, right. And you also said that for the past 18 or 20 years, you've avoided... going into jail. I was wondering if you could give any of us peons out here a few helpful hints on how to avoid that unfortunate circumstance. You know, one or two things we could jot down on the back of our driver's license or something.
That'd be very dangerous for me to do that. But as sure as hell, whatever I told you would not work for you the next time you tried to use it. Like if you went to jail, you'd blame me.
Can't hurt.
What's that? Get hurt? All right, just in a very quick, I've always assumed there's no such thing as paranoia, that the menace is really worse than what people tell you it is, even your most paranoid friends. And I just never assume that anybody around me is anything but a potential menace. And that goes for a lot of my best friends. And most people I know, my friends who have been busted for that reason, because they just get dumb about what they're doing. And the minute I say that, I'll be busted tomorrow, probably.
Question over here.
Steamboat Springs or something.
Would you like to ask a question?
Frame.
Yeah, got a three-part question. I'll just ask it, and you can respond in any order you want.
Okay, heart attack.
One. How long have you been writing under the pen name Robert K. Brown? Two, when did you start Soldier of Fortune
he or
magazine?
K.
Oh, Brown.
And, a lot of Browns.
The third part is your $50,000 offer for Idi Amin's head on a silver platter still in effect?
That's the kind of thing that gets me out of journalism. You know, I could get involved in a project like that. Particularly if we could combine it with journalism. Yeah, I could get paid for a story and also paid for the head. I say that now, and that is one more strike against me when I go into the country. No, I prefer to, for the same money, I much prefer to go after Idi Amin's head than I would have to suffer to write another book.
Would you like to ask a question over here?
It's a lot more fun, yes.
I guess it's a lot easier for all of us to stay out of jail if we all have a 300-pound swollen lawyer around us all the time.
Not if he's dead. Which he is.
Oh, excuse me.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering,
sit down.
You mentioned earlier the Great American Slide, and I'm wondering what you meant by that, by America being in a slide, if you could be more specific.
I think this was a nice idea we had in this country and a nice landscape to experiment with. But I think there comes a certain, there comes a time in almost any kind of experimentation or idea, we have to evaluate it, and maybe our time has come. And in the context of just the real world, and not just the American world, but all around, we haven't done too well. We have not been able to sell our. We're not a very good advertisement for the idea that we represented.
Well, do you think there's a hope, or are you pessimistic in your? And
hope
what you
what?
Say. Do you think there's a hope for us coming out of this slide, or what?
No. You know, and then the damage is done, you know. If you lose one wheel off a car, you might be able to get to the side of the road. And some freaks can make it on two wheels, but if you lose three, man, you're in serious trouble. I think we lost three.
So it
won't work when you're still rolling.
So we may as well go down snorting as much coke as we can, huh?
I didn't say that.
Well, it'd be a good way to go down.
Well, shit, do you have any coke? You can come up and see me. I would agree with you, but I might indulge you.
You got a question here in the red sweater?
Liberal? Well, McGovern was beaten in 72 worse than any losing candidate since whoever first ran against George Washington. And it's getting more and more painful for a lot of people to remember who beat him and who they voted for. His name was Richard Milhouse Nixon, and he was a fucking rotten bastard and a dishonest pig, and he got not nearly enough what he should have gotten. You talk about losing battles and degrading the system. Nobody has done more to discredit the idea that a democracy can work and the decent people can be elected and run it than Richard Nixon. He shamed us all. But not so much that 62% of the people in the country didn't vote for him in 72. And those bastards have it on their conscience, and they should.
Would you like to ask a question back there?
Yeah, it's rather disconcerting to hear you say that with the removal of President Nixon and, you feel that a lot of the big evil has been removed from Washington. You feel the same way about Carter when he's carrying on.
I didn't say that. No, you people have a tendency here to kind of wonder, you know.
Okay, but anyway, to say that you feel the same way about Carter, which you did say, and I believe the title of the Rolling Stone article was an endorsement with fear and loathing, but an endorsement.
That's true. All that proves is that one 12-point headline on the cover is worth 20,000 words inside. I never said that.
Well, I read the article pretty thoroughly, and
no, you read the headline.
Okay, and the article. But I'm saying that shouldn't you be doing something more? I mean, it's fine that you've got a little circle of friends that I'm sure supply you with the best drugs possible, but for the person on the street
still being
arrested, persecuted and put in jail, while it's fine for a national figure,
you're getting excited, you can get away with it.
But don't you feel you should be, endorsing a candidate who instead of is going for an air war in Guerrero, and having a lot of people killed and shot, pouring millions into it.
Get a grip on yourself.
That you should be endorsing somebody who should be legalizing psychedelics.
I'm sure you're a wonderful person, but I don't understand you. Yeah. I just bought that. That's pure ivory. You should be intimidated. Now, pick out one of your complaints. Let's take them one at a time.
I'm just saying that, don't you think, instead of saying that you're going along with Carter, it's fine with his posturings against the big oil companies and everything, but shouldn't you be moving towards where everybody could use the drugs that you obviously have got so much out of?
You're just a natural fool. At first you set yourself up for an obvious answer,
Do you have a question over here?
I can't answer questions like that. Not in public. Who are you? Who do you work for?
Would you continue doing that?
I'm just wondering if there's any substance behind the, have a good time, let's all get high, I mean, that only gets us so far.
I think people are looking to me for some kind of justification of what you want to do anyway. Why don't you just go ahead and do it? I'm not endorsing that. It's not just a matter of self-defense or politics. No, I wouldn't tell anybody to go ahead and get into drugs or madness. But if you want to, you can handle it, yeah. It's a nice way to go sometime.
Do you really believe... right here. Oh,
who's talking?
Back here. Back where you were looking.
Okay.
Yeah, right.
You made a statement in your interview in New Times magazine that without the use of drugs, you'd have the mind of a 40-year-old accountant.
Did I say that?
Well, supposedly.
I don't think I said that.
Supposedly. Do you really believe that, and do you suggest it?
No, I don't believe it at all. Without the use of drugs, I may be working for Time Magazine, perhaps. Or the New York Times.
If you didn't say that, then I have another question. Can you really do the glasses?
Why do you believe what you read in magazines? You must be crazy.
I was asking you. I don't believe it.
Oh, all right.
That's why I came, to ask you.
No, I don't think I said that. And it's possible, But if I did, I was wrong. I know the direction you're getting at, you know, what direction you're wondering in, and it's probably the same one I was wondering in, which meant that part of the question was what effect of, you know, these drugs had on your, you know, your life, and it's the kind of question that people are always after you with. And it's obvious that you can't maintain a total duality of lifestyles that allow you to work as the managing editor, say, of the Utica Daily News, and also be, you know, some kind of acid freak, you know, somebody who steals airplanes at nights and, you know, that zooms over, you know, over Pittsburgh and comes back and how handles the end of the life. So if you get into drugs and you try to maintain a any kind of functioning role in the society, yeah, they're going to be a factor, if only because people will make them a factor.
One more question. They have a picture of you passing a sobriety, a test to prove that you're sober by flipping your glasses off the back of your head and catching them. Can you really, yeah. Can you really do that?
Only under extreme pressure. Which I did there.
Can we pressure you enough?
I did that, and I beat the CHP twice in four nights. And both times, I really should have been locked up.
So, thank you.
No, I shouldn't have. The evidence suggests that I was as harmless as I claimed to be. I didn't hit anybody. I caused no trouble. But I was extremely bent.
Okay.
We have a question from the balcony.
How can you be in the balcony? I'm down here. The dark one.
The hell of a balcony. You're on.
1977, we came down. Given your actions and your attitude, as demonstrated here and reported in the media, I got one question. How do you, to preface it, what I'm talking about primarily is the way you acted when you first met Carter. You were drunk, you were loud, you were all those things.
I was the same way I am now.
Exactly. My question is, how
do you... Drunk and loud, you bastard.
You're freaking virtual, you chump.
Yeah.
What I want to know.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Your people made this, you swine. Go ahead. Drunk and loud, indeed.
Seriously.
Oh, you're right, though. First met Carter, I was probably worse than
Andrew. One question. How do you maintain your credibility and your contacts with people like Ted Kennedy, who introduced you to Carter, who was your ticket to Carter? How do you maintain your contacts with those people that you seem to have so much fun putting down? You seem to have so much fun taking apart.
They like me. that's an honest answer. I don't know. That is a fact. Now, Carter worries about me. He told people that he thinks I'm a bad advertisement for the human race, and but he thinks I'm salvageable. You know, people all through my life have felt that way. That if I could just be brought to see the light, that I would be different. But they were just dumb. That's all the light, a lot of way I made it. Or else I'm doomed. It doesn't matter. You know, reality is there. Maybe here. Who's talking?
If I were to grant you three wishes right now, what would they be?
One that we have to get, we will end this thing quickly. That's not really a wish, I can do that. I'd like to, let's see, Jesus.
There
you go. No, you know, when you think about it, it plays a lot of trouble. Jerry Collins. I want to just kind of have the mobility and the whatever income it would take to just get into a total degenerate lifestyle. I like to be let alone on a fairly elevated level. Yeah, I'm tired of wars, I'm tired of fighting with people. Well, maybe I'm not, but there's I'm trying to play with the wrong people. I'd like to just get into sort of a white trash drifting trip, you know, just to make a fool of myself and not have to worry that it'll show up in the, you know, Time magazine next week.
You've got two more.
Two more, right?
Yeah.
That's it. And you're one of them, who are wherever you are. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what do you want to say?
No, there's two more wishes. You only made one.
Oh, my God. Well, I could use some sleep right now. I'd like to have... what? I'm trying. You know, I don't want to work for the Prison Fellowship Committee. Yeah, the third one was, I wish I could answer your question.
Okay, and then...
Think about that. Yeah, Hunter? I might solve a lot of problems, but I could.
Who's that guy sitting next to you?
Who's talking?
Who's that guy sitting next to you?
Who is this? Who's talking? Say it again.
I'd like to know if that cane you have has any mystical significance to you. And I'd also like to know if you think fascism is doing well in America today.
Better than ever, yeah.
Is that the cane or fascism?
Well, fascism always does pretty well when people get lazy and pissed off. You know, almost any solution you come to when you figure, oh, fuck, I'm tired of that, or you're thinking about this, well, just kill those bastards. You know, that's... Anytime things get, you know, the best of you, that's the natural drift isn't a fascistic kind of solution. So in a country where there are no solutions for the main problems, I think God led us to adopt fascistic solutions.
Do you know anything about the Wundervogel movement in Germany before the Second World War?
What kind of movie?
The Wundervogel movement in Germany.
No.
Okay, I defer my last question so we can get on with this and you can get some sleep.
That's true. We have two more minutes and two more questions. We'll take one thrown ringer, one blind shot, and then one serious one. I don't think about it much. He didn't bother me. What do you want to know about him? That acid freak, that goddamn... You want to know about what Chancellor his dope habits? Who's? Oh, yeah, cop. He plays at Eva game. Just what I'm doing now, except we're getting paid for it. I was broke, yeah, and not quite sane. I'm still broke and not quite sane, but the form has changed somehow. I was ejected and rejected by almost every place that I... I have no... I claim Columbia just to embarrass Columbia. I went there enough.
Hunter, I started with that first question again. I just decided maybe I would ask you, is reality a pickle or a prune or a 3-2 joke?
That's a question you've been waiting for all night. Yeah. What do you think?
I don't know. B. No. A pickle.
Pickle.
Well.
A pickle. A 3-2 joke.
Well,
Hunter.
You. Well, very drugs.
Hunter, you seem.
Let's get this under control here. These people are.
Hunter, you seem to be kind of a basic hedonist, like most of us, I imagine. Is that a true statement to begin with?
Well, you said it seems that way, and I think we should just leave it that way.
Okay, just to get on with my last kind of two-part question, I'd like to know what you thought of the Grateful Dead and what are six of your favorite things to do.
The Grateful Dead are, has been for a long time one of my favorite bands and favorite people. Favorite things to do, I like to... look at my watch. See, to me it's 12 o'clock. That's what my watch does.